colloquium speaker to you. That's Mikhail
Kaparov.
So I'm going to give you a little bit of his biography. So Mikhail did his PhD in mathematics at the Steklov Institute in Moscow. He did a postdoc at Cornell and then had professorships at Northwestern, down the road at University of Toronto, at Yale, and then finally at the Kavli Institute for the Physics and Mathematics of the Universe in Tokyo, where he still is today. So Mikhail works mostly in the areas of algebra, algebraic geometry, and category theory. He's visiting PI this week as part of the conference on cohomological all algebras, and he very graciously agreed to teach the rest of us a little bit about what's exciting in that field.
Okay, thank you very much. So I was told that most of my audience will be real physicists, and so I should be gentle in discussing mathematical concepts. So I will go perhaps more elementary than normal. So my title will be announced, Perverse Schobers and Theories. But I'll spend most of the time explaining mathematical concepts that lead to this. So in the title, perverse Schobers are some generalizations of perverse sheaves. And perverse sheaves are some analogs of sheaves. So I will start by discussing the mathematical concept of sheaves. So this is the agricultural terminology. So you have things tied neatly into bundles, sheaves, and things like this. It is not uncommon in physics. So sheaves are basically some locally defined data. A sheaf F is a datum which, on some space, associates to every domain U, open domain, say some vector space F of U. Now it can be a space of functions or fields of some kind on U. And it's by saying that this locally defined datum means that such a datum on a big U is recovered from datum on small pieces if the small pieces cover our U. If you have, say, functions here, 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 which are compatible on the intersections, then is there a unique one globally defined? So if there's U1, U2, F of U recovered from F of U. This, of course, is a very formal concept. Let me consider a down-to-earth example, which already is instructive. Suppose we consider sheaves on the complex plane, which is just x equals c, and we say that F of U is the vector space of holomorphic solutions of some simple linear differential equation. Let me write the simple equation like this. Z du over dz equals 1 half u. So solutions of this equation are constant multiples of square root of z. But because square root of z is a multi-valued function, two-valued function, there is a little subtlety there. So if I make a picture, so this is my complex plane C, and this is 0. So if I take an open domain U somewhere here, then F of U is one-dimensional. Because there is a branch of square root, and the other branch is minus it, it's the same space. So in here, it's one-dimensional. So it sort of varies smoothly in this way. So here, here, here. But if I take u here, of this, there is no section. There is nothing, because there is no solution defined everywhere here. So what happens here is that outside 0, it behaves smoothly, or topologically, or locally constantly. So let's say locally constant. So a section here determines a section here. A function here determines a function here, determines a function here, and so on. And at 0, so there is some kind of defect. At 0, some kind of defect. So more generally, we can consider differential equation of more complicated type. So for example, the same, but differential equation. I write p of u equals 0. I write a linear differential equation. So p of u would be something like this, a n of z. Well, u to the n plus a n minus 1 of z. U n minus 1 plus a n of z times u. Where those are, let's say, polynomials. Well, again, the same thing happens. When the first coefficient vanishes, it looks like the degree of the differential equation drops. So something happens. It happens exactly such situation. So let me mark here in the plane. Let me mark all the zeros. That's called A, is the set of zeros of A n of z. Then outside, then we will have, in this terminology, defects at A. And smooth, everything will be smooth outside A. Well, we can ask, is it a trivial example or not? Of course, it's a very non-trivial example, because there will be generally an n-dimensional space of solutions. So here would be. So f of u would be n-dimensional. N is the order of the equation. So when we move around, there are some monodromy transformations, which is a transcendental problem to find. And we approach here, there may or may not be solutions which extend to the singular points. And such examples, of course, happen all the time. Let me generalize this a little bit and introduce term constructible sheaf. Constructible sheaf. So it may be already in higher dimensions. It would be smooth, as smooth in the sense, but with defects. And defects are given generally by some stratification. With defects. Given by a stratification. So what does this mean? Well, so suppose, let me just make a picture. General case is not really more complicated. So this is in two dimensions picture. So everything is smooth here, the same dimension. So if you move around, it would be identified. But if we are in the neighborhood of this branch, it will be slightly different. But if we move along the branch, it also will be smooth. And here will be will very smoothly. But at this point, it will be something else, the third type of behavior. This example of a constructible sheaf, so an example of a non-constructible sheaf. Well, again, simply on complex plane C, consider f to be the sheaf of holomorphic functions denoted by O, which means that O of u is all holomorphic functions. Of course, it doesn't have this behavior at all, because if I expand my open set just a little, the supply of holomorphic functions changes drastically. So this more or less explains the concept of a sheaf, and I will really not need anything more than this type of intuition. Now, as part two, let me move this just a little up. Yes. In the same way, let me explain what are perverse sheaves. So first of all, there is nothing perverse about them. It's just a terminology. And it is very, very natural from this point of view. So consider the case of complex line. And consider this example as before, but consider it more systematically. We have the sheaf of holomorphic functions, and the differential operator takes a holomorphic function to another holomorphic function, O. And let's consider this entire thing. By putting brackets, I want to say that I consider this entire datum and call this datum by F with a dot. So a dot signifies that there are more than one part in this construction. So before, we are considering our sheaf F was, in this terminology, will be the kernel of this map. So given by the condition P of U equals 0. But we can also look at what happens in the image. We can look at the solvability of the inhomogeneous equation. We can look whether a function V can be represented in the form P of U. But we also have what is called the co-kernel. It is the functions all sort of V of Z modulo V of Z of the form P of U, P of U of Z. So then again, it's kind of clear what happens. Outside of the zeros of the highest term, every function can be represented. Again, we have a differential equation resolved under the top derivative, and it can be solved. Near this thing, there is a finite dimensional index, finite dimensional space of functions which are not represented like this. So this co-kernel equals 0 outside A. So for more systematic study, it is this whole thing that is important. Because suppose this thing varies in a family, then if the kernel jumps, then this also changes a little. If there is more solutions of the homogeneous equation, then it becomes harder to solve the inhomogeneous equation. So the whole thing is important. The whole thing, which I called F, is important. Well, this thing is an example of a perverse sheaf. And in fact, any perverse sheaf on the complex line can be represented like this. There is nothing more, nothing less. So this F is a perverse sheaf. Let me be a little more systematic. So this example in one dimension. So in higher, and again, I will be speaking only about the complex domain. Everything will be in some complex space of possibly higher dimensions, complex domain. Instead of one differential operator, we can consider several. Have something like this. Suppose we have not necessarily, so let me write like this first, from some differential operator D. It would be a scalar differential operator. But I also can write a matrix differential operator. I write n0 and cross n1. It will be a matrix differential operator of matrices of size n0 cross n1. Call this L0. Then O n2 would be d1. O n. So if, and we consider complexes, what goes on complexes of matrix partial differential operator. Complexes means that if we go twice, we get zero. D1, DI, DI minus one. So this simply, if you write it symbolically as d square equals zero, this is a common place in many areas of physics. It is related to supersymmetry and supercharges. And more generally, we don't have to consider actual matrices. We can form, for example, vector bundles. Or vector bundles. And of course, everybody knows the most famous example of a complex is the Durham complex. We have functions, Durham differential goes to one forms, and so on. And so on. So if we have such a complex, then there's a generalization of solutions. Generalization of just taking the kernel and just taking the co-kernel. We can take a kernel here, but the image is contained in the kernel, so we take the quotient. So it gives what's called cohomology sheaves. I write hi underlined of f. So if this object is now f, so and this is a sheaf, which is kernel of di. Model of the image of di minus 1. So a perverse sheaf, is a complex of this nature with some conditions. Let me say briefly what the conditions are. Reverse means. So first of all, this cohomology sheaf is constructible. Second, its support. So what happened, for instance, in that example, the first sheaf, the kernel, was present everywhere. But the second one was only present at isolated points. It has generalization like this, that hi sits on a locus of complex codimension I, or smaller. Which means that those things, they kind of die out as we go to the right. So they die out.
Bigger or equal to 1?
Bigger. Yeah. They die out. And the third condition, if I say they just die out, it's not a balanced condition. A third condition is I write it symbolically, I just say, but not too fast. So there's a dual condition, which is a little harder to write, but it makes it symmetric. Dual condition. For example, the Durham complex is an example of a perverse sheaf. It's not a very complicated example, but it's an example. What's also important, that this concept is purely topological. Even though I said we consider matrix differential operators, that's really not necessary. We can consider any type of sheaves here and any type of maps as long as the conditions are satisfied. It's a purely topological concept. Exactly. And when this concept was first introduced in the 80s, it seemed a little exotic. But since then, it has found many applications in different areas of mathematics, algebraic geometry, representation theory, and certainly advanced areas of physics. Let me again discuss elementary aspects of this theory. So when this concept was introduced, people were interested in describing such perverse sheaves in an elementary way. Let me call this third part elementary. Or quiver, description in terms of quiver. Quiver descriptions of perverse sheaves. Good place to continue. Maybe I'll do this. Just do it here. So we consider the simplest case of perverse sheaves on the complex plane with just one singularity, something like this. That is an example already of a perverse sheaf, C0. So we have the complex plane or the disk with one point where the singularity can occur. So in such an object here, a sheaf is the same. This the one of the classical elementary descriptions goes that such a thing is the same or can be equivalently represented as a diagram or a quiver of two vector spaces. Vector spaces traditionally denote phi and psi, and two maps between them, A and B. So, and psi is known as the space of nearby cycles. It simply means that locally outside here, the sheaf is reduced to a perverse sheaf is reduced to a locally constant sheaf. So it is simply the space of sections nearby. And this is known as the space of vanishing cycles. This is the jump between what happens, roughly speaking, is the difference between what happens here and what happens here. And from topology, there are two maps between them in both directions, and condition is maybe I write here. Just a moment. Let me use this part of the board to complement what I'm saying here. The condition R such that 1 minus AB, we go, and this is denoted T psi. And 1 minus BA, it's a self map of this T phi, are invertible. And the meaning of this, those are the monodromies. This is simply the monodromy, what happens if you go around zero. And this is a similar version of monodromy on the vanishing cycles. Now, already from here, one can get some understanding of a more general case. So let's return to the situation which was just on this board, and I consider perverse sheaves on the complex plane with singularities in a set A. Well, let's denote the set W1, Wn. So then at every point, near every point Wi, We have the previous situation. We have what we had there. So there is space phi I is vanishing cycles at wi. So there will be some space phi I here. And some at a point wj, there will be a space phi j. But now, if I make a little disk here and here, there will be a map to psi I from this description. And this will be also psi j, and would map here. So if I take a path gamma from wi to gamma j, then I have from here to psi I, and this is the monodromy. So from phi to psi in my notation was a, then the monodromy, then b. I get a transformation, let's call the transport map, called Mij of gamma from phi I to phi j. Now this presumes that this gamma doesn't pass through any other singular points. And it's interesting to see what happens when we move gamma across such a point. Let me make a picture for this. Suppose there is wi. Suppose here is wj. And here is wk. Suppose my one path gamma goes like this. And there is a path here. There is a path here. And my other path, gamma prime, goes here. And this is path alpha. And this is part beta. Then we have the so-called Picard-Lefschetz formula, or wall crossing formula. So in modern terminology, it is, you can call it wall crossing. It says this, that M ik of gamma prime differs from m ik of gamma by this composition, plus m jk of alpha m ij of beta. Now maybe it's worth explaining more historical origin of the term vanishing cycles, and the names of Picard and Lefschetz are attached here because Picard and Lefschetz, of course, did not know anything about perverse sheaves. At least they didn't think they know about them. Okay, I understood. Yes.
Try it now.
Oh, okay.
This is higher.
Ah, yes, it's coming. Okay, this goes here, this goes here. Okay, I want to make another picture and want to keep it for the, I will keep it for a while. Let me consider some complex space, complex manifold of dimension n. And consider a function on the space, w, which has only quadratic singularities. So with a simple singular points. It's called complex Morse function. This was the original context of the works of Lefschetz in algebraic geometry. So we have a function with values in the complex plane. And there are some singular points here. The I are singular points, which means the differential at the I of W is zero. Critical points. So then if you look at the fibers, so near the point Wi, the fiber will have a singularity, will have a simple quadratic singularity. I'll make a picture in the complex domain. But if you do it, go around this, the nearby fiber will be a non-singular variety. It would look a little like this. And if you look closely, if you contemplate it for a long time, we'll see that there is a real sphere here. Would be a real sphere of n minus 1 of dimension epsilon. When we approach W, this sphere will contract to a point. It is called the vanishing sphere, or the vanishing cycle of Lefschetz. So in this situation, there is a natural perverse sheaf Fw, so natural perverse sheaf associated to W with a phi I, one dimension. And it is spanned by homology of this cycle. So, and in this case, Mij of alpha are some numbers. Because a map from one dimensional space to another dimension, another one dimensional space corresponding to another point Wj. So from this picture with transport maps, one can obtain a description of category of perverse sheaves for any set A. Let me call it symbolically or just to use a good word, let's call it the Vladivostok description. Vladivostok is the furthest city in Russia.
Not from Japan,
yes. Yes, but that's probably why it came. To my mind, it was suggested by Jan, the description, this term. So suppose we have our set A somewhere in the complex plane. This is our set A. And let's choose a point very, very far away called V. And this will be the Vladivostok. And let's join every point of A with Vladivostok by a path. And assume that those paths are not intersect. Do not intersect. There are many ways of doing this. Topologically, there is interesting totality of such paths. So this forms some kind of spider. Let's call this a spider. It's a system of roads from every point Wi to Vladivostok and back. So then we can do the following thing. We can do Mij, which goes from phi I. Then this goes to psi at this point, psi V, and then back to phi J. So and then the classical result about perverse sheaves in this case. So Vladivostok description due to Gelfand, McPherson, Velon. So they say, so the data corresponding of vector spaces phi I, we also need the monodromy around them, ti, and any choices of Mij, those maps can be arbitrary. For appropriate perverse sheaf, we can realize anything. And more or less, the choices are in one-to-one correspondence to perverse sheaves on C the singularities and A, modulo some identification. And identification is such that suppose the sheaf has no singularities at all, then the phis are zero. So if you add such sheaf, we don't change anything because it will be the same. So we should factorize, we should identify sheaves which differ by addition of a constant sheaf. Okay, so now let me move this all up. No, okay, I think it's okay. I just want to move this. Ah, I see. It needs a little nudge, I see. Yeah, a little nudge, okay. And I'll keep it there. I won't play around too much. Okay. But that's not the only way of looking at such things. We can also adopt the rectilinear approach. It means that suppose A is in general position. It simply means no collinearities. So then we can join every two point, every wi and wj, by a straight line without hitting anything in between. And we write mij equals mij of straight segment, straight line. Then again, in this case, it's not hard to modify that theorem and to say again, phi I, ti, mij, they correspond to perv ca. Now, an interesting question is why do we want to do this? Why? From this topological point of view, it is not obvious that we should pay special attention to this. Let me discuss this a little. Why rectilinear? Well, there are two reasons. So first of all, suppose our perverse sheaf comes from a differential equation, and we secretly want to do a Fourier transform. If we want Fourier transform. What does it mean? Suppose F corresponds to differential operator from O to O. So in P is like a polynomial in Z and del Z. Then the Fourier transform would be a polynomial in Xi and del Xi, where Xi corresponds to del Z. And del xi correspond to z with minus sign. Yeah, if this will be a new differential operator, whose solutions morally will be the Fourier transforms of solutions of this one. So then we have v of xi would be morally something integral u of z e to minus xi z dz. Except it's everything in the complex domain. So we should integrate over a contour. So in which contour? The contour should be such that this e to the minus xi z goes to 0. That would be certain half plane. So the contour should go to infinity. And so it should end in the area where this decays. So when we study this, that of course the linear structure on the set really matters. So linear, let me say linear.
You assume P regular.
Well, I skip a few things.
Otherwise, you.
Yes. I skip a little. I say that if it's kind of regular singularity, this will be an irregular singularity. And we study behavior of this near infinity. Yes, so real question is exactly like this. We start with a perverse sheaf, we form a regular singular differential operator, then do Fourier transform, and anyway, linear structure matters. That's one situation, one question, and the other question, reason for interest is B, in the complex Morse function picture. We had a complex function. Suppose we take a real part of W. It's a function that is a real Morse function. And the critical points will be signature MN. Or we may take a real part of lambda W for any non-zero lambda. So if we have two points, wi and wj, and we do this interval, and if this angle is theta, and take lambda to be e to the minus I theta, so then mij in this situation up there of a straight line would be the number of gradient trajectories. Trajectories of Re of lambda W from the critical point Zi. So this would be something like this. The real part would be sort of indefinite quadratic form. So normally, if you go down from between the two critical points of the same index, there will be no gradient trajectories. But in this case, there will be, and this number would be exactly this thing. So from Zi to Zj. There is a reason for doing this. OK, so now how I approach this? Maybe I'll continue here. So one can continue this rectilinear point of view by doing what can be called isomonodromic deformation. Of perv. This means if I start with a bunch of points, set A, and then I move them continuously to A prime. This, because it's a topological concept, they have identification between perv CA and perv CA prime. So it's good as long as they don't merge. So I have the space C to the N non-zero. So not equal. The set of collections, set of distinct. But if we are sort of hell-bent on doing rectilinear picture, that sometimes they will not be in general position. So here inside, we have Cn generic, which means no collinearities. Then what will happen if we keep moving our points? Then each time we can do the rectilinear picture. And this rectilinear picture will change when we cross the collinearity. So this is equal, let me write it like this, Cn not equal minus some walls. And this is what some physicists call this walls of marginal stability. I'm running ahead of myself. So this thing is a union, so it's a real codimension one. So there's a union of chambers which are separated by walls. So in the wall, near the wall, the three points, say I, J, K, will be something like this. Here it will be on one side, here it will be on the other side. So then F gives in each C, in each chamber C, it's a chamber. So it will be M, I, G, C from phi I to phi J. So a straight transition and wall crossing. So M, M, I, J, C prime equals M, I, J, C plus M, J, K, C, M, I, M, I, K, prime, M, I, K, C, M, I, J, C. So the same wall crossing formula, which is just formulated in terms of such deformation. So in all of this is purely topological theory of perverse sheaves. So now I want to go, so to say, one level higher and replace sheaves by more complicated structures. So let me call it part number five. And here I want to discuss the concept of perverse shoppers. So we can say that a category, so let me first recall the concept of a category, C, is like a Hilbert space. So let's compare the concept of Hilbert space, V. Means that there is scalar product, which is a complex number. In the category, we have objects, and we have something like a scalar product from A to B, but is now a vector space. So we think of them as maps from A to B, some maps. And the typical example would be the category C can be the category of vector spaces, maybe a category of sheaves, or the category of complexes of the kind I discussed before. And this is interesting, so this is what I want to focus, because I want to focus on the concept of triangulated categories. They are like this category, like complexes. So the real triangulated because there is a concept or the class of exact triangles. A, B, C, like this, which sort of replace addition. So morally, B is some kind of twisted sum of A and C, or something like a composite particle. And this brings us to the topic of this week's workshop. So this upgrades addition. So upgrades addition. Addition in the vector space. So then, But in joint work with Schechtman, we introduced the concept, that actually it was a conjectural concept of perverse Schobers. Which means I write equals and question mark, something like perverse sheaves, but not of vector spaces, but of this type of categories. Well, we introduced, the concept is a desire. So, and I'll tell a little later what we can actually do. Yeah? So first, the obvious problem is that a perverse sheaf is not a sheaf. So we cannot say we just replace everything with categories. And if we just talk in terms of complexes, then complexes of categories, it is not clear what it means. However, so what we can do is that most of the quiver descriptions upgrade. So in particular, if we want to describe Schobers on complex plane with singularity at zero, we can just postulate it's a similar kind of data, but with categories, phi and psi. Psi are triangulated categories. So there are two maps within them, functors, A and B, triangulated functors. In fact, we require that B is adjoint to A. I don't go into detail on what adjoint means. But it means, in particular, that there is a map from identity of psi to the composition AB, and will be a triangle, and will be some transformation here, some functor, which is an equivalence. So it's so there will be a functor here, there will be a functor here. And such a datum is known as a spherical functor. Since only one functor is independent, it's known as a spherical functor. And the reason that why it's called spherical has something to do with that vanishing sphere up there. This is the second one. So if we say, if we continue in this on this path, then for a set A in complex numbers, we have categories phi I. We have transport functors. Mij of gamma from phi I to phi j. And Picard-Lefschetz formulas, they upgrade in this situation, they upgrade to a triangle. In the formula we had, there is one formula here. So it upgrades to Picard. Would be m I k of gamma. There will be a map between functors called natural transformation, m j k of alpha, m I j of beta, would be m I k of gamma prime. There will be some arrows here, such that it will hold. So in all other features, generalize the Vladivostok description, the rectilinear picture, the isomonodromic deformation, generalized features. So with a joint work with Dyckerhoff and Schechtman and Soebelman. It's still in progress, so it's not written, at least. So we have a precise definition of Schober's on a Riemann surface. For example, on the complex plane, with those features. So, and in the last few minutes, I want to say that this analysis of Schober's is very similar to the infrared analysis of physical theories of Guyotum or Witten. Maybe since I'm almost out of time, I'll just say this is similar, very similar, to the so-called algebra of the infrared of Guyotum or Witten. So they in the infrared, so what physicists say, what survives only vacua and tunneling between the vacua. In the appropriate class of theories, 2D n equals 2 massive theories, so there are finitely many vacua. Let's call the set of vacua A, I, J, and so on. So, and there are central charges between vacua sectors from the supersymmetry algebra. Charges, they are additive. So Cij plus Cjk equals Cik, which means that Cij can be represented as Wi minus Wj. So in this case, there is a set A. The set A is embedded in C up to shift. And well, basically, what I want to say that in this, the features. Maybe I won't go into details here, that the features that are constructed in this setting are very, very much parallel to the features of a perverse Schober's. So features very parallel. And in the work in progress with Soebelman and Suhanov, we can develop similar algebraic formalism for Schober's. So similar algebraic formalism for Schober's. We don't assume that we have a theory. We say we have a Schober. We have all this data, and it produces the algebraic features that are familiar from physical studies. So it may suggest that theories are somehow governed by Schober's, but it's a little speculative, but it's an interesting direction to think. Thank you very much.
So questions for Mikhail?
We don't have any definition of a general definition of perverse shift of categories.
We have a let me tell you the definition we have. So if let's try to give a definition of perverse sheaf, not talking about complexes. It would be like this: if you have an open set U, and inside it's a disk U, and inside we have a bunch of disks U prime, And there is a, if there is at most one singular point in this, then for a perverse sheaf, so say XA, only zero-dimensional cohomology, H not equal to zero, of relative cohomology. So H zero is the invariant. So we can define perverse sheaves as data on such things, satisfying some conditions like exact sequence of triples and so on. Now this thing categorifies.
This is in complex dimension.
In complex dimension one, yes. Yes, so what I was talking, yes, is in complex dimension one.
And the high dimension, do you have any?
Well, you can do, for instance, if you have a normal crossing, then you can do something. But already in this smaller dimension, we see features which are of great interest.
More questions?
Of the complex Morse function, is there some relationship with the Fekai category of the fibers?
Yes. So in this case, there is a Schober on the base whose generic fiber, so to say, is the Fekai category of the fiber. So the vanishing category at the point is the category of vector spaces. And in this case, there's the concept of cohomology with coefficient in this Schober, and this is the Fekai Seidel category of this situation. So reason to consider Schobers that the analog of cohomology with coefficients in the Schober has the flavor of Fekai category.
Can you actually define the notion of
cohomology? Yes, in our context, yes. Yes.
Any more questions?
Sorry, what is the origin of the name, the Schober?
Schober is a German word for stack. It's agricultural terminology. People in Germany, they didn't want to use French terminology, so they developed their own.
Any before we thank Mikhail one more time, let me remind you that downstairs in the first floor bistro, there's some snacks and coffee, and I believe you have a half hour coffee break in those of you who are in this conference. Thank Mikhail again.